It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
You do realize we are a living joke. That's the whole thing now, is like,
yeah.
If you're white men, the saddest thing you can do while still being the most common is to have a podcast.
Yeah. Even but at our age, I think a little bit.
We were sad white men podcasting way before it was cool. Or not uncool, cool. Cool to make fun of.
Yeah. Yep. We're the OG.
Yeah.
Middle-aged white men.
We were pointlessly screaming our privilege into the void back before people caught on.
Oh, man.
Pointlessly screaming. That's our new tagline. Pointlessly screaming our privilege into the void since 2011.
Long time.
Maybe this is when we finally get merch, because that sounds like a good one. Could you turn off the weather?
No, I wish I could. It's not good.
Tomorrow, better. Tomorrow's high is only 80. I think we're getting some rain or something. Or
I thought we're not getting heat domed. I thought we were getting heat domed.
I wouldn't know if I was, but I believe the high tomorrow is only 80. There is a heat advisory until 8 o'clock tonight. Yesterday, the heat was so bad, I couldn't stand it in this room, and I brought out extra fans to blow on me, and then much later, I found out the main air conditioner had crapped out, and I tried to fix it, and I eventually figured out that whole breaker had died, but it was at 9:30 at night, so I got to throw on a nightshirt, turn the flashlight on my phone, and walk through the dark out into the completely unkempt wild prairie of our backyard to find our external circuit breaker to turn it back. So that was real fun. And let me tell you, it was way hotter outside.
External circuit breaker.
Yes, our fuse box is outside.
Our
house was not well built. Our house was not.
I mean, I have heard of that. But I've often thought, well, that doesn't seem, I mean,
no, it's someone a terrible could
just,
idea.
Yeah, someone could just totally mess up your whole
it's
thing.
It's a terrible idea for a lot of reasons. Sometimes it's not good to go outside and you still want to, you know, have electricity.
Yeah.
What it is the original one, you can actually still see it. It's in the kitchen. But when they built the pool room, they built it on the outside of that. We also have an attached garage that has no internal access.
So it's attached, but
yes,
you have
but
to
you still have to go outside.
Outside.
Yeah, and like there's a pantry, right? Like if we busted the wall through the back pantry, we'd be in the garage. It's a perfect place for it. Hmm. Like our house is poorly designed. And ad hoc design that you can tell what came later, and it's not the room I'm sitting in came later. Yeah, it's a mess. But it's really hot. But I did a smart early this morning. I fired up the grill, and I bought this big old honking piece of meat, and I cooked it. And now it's cooling and everything, and I'm going to slice it up thin, and we're going to have them like on salads. We're going to have like steak salads and stuff.
Nice.
So I've essentially done all the things that should heat stuff up today, and I did it outside, so it's fine. So it should be good. Cool. That Hy-Vee had a steak sale this weekend. So.
Oh yeah, you mentioned that. I was gonna say something.
You did?
Yeah, you did. I was gonna say something to Abby about it, and I forgot.
It wasn't that great a deal. But this one that I cooked is good. It was a sirloin, but it was like, I don't know, it was a sadder sirloin. But it was huge and it was like $7. And I think it's because it was right on the end of not being okay anymore, I think, maybe. But I cooked it up. And, I mean, because it's like a pound and a half of sirloin for like $7, which is pretty nice. I got a fancier one that is in the freezer and we'll have it sometime. But this one, like I said, it's just going to be little pieces for salads. It's because we bought a lot of the salad stuff at the farmer's market because it is the time when all the lettuces are coming up and everything. So
when you grill a steak, like, do you have a process or do you have
every time I grill a steak, I have a specific process. Every time it is a different process.
You haven't found one you like.
So the internet is a powerful, wonderful thing in some ways, in that you can look up fucking anything, and the internet will teach you how to do anything. Like, I defy anyone to come up with something that humanity is capable of doing at this point. I bet you somewhere out there, the internet will teach you how to make a nuke. I'll bet it's possible. You'll probably have to get a hold of some plutonium, but still. I have done things where like I don't even save instruction books anymore because I'm like, I can just see it online if I need it. It's fine. I have had things where like something was, well, Trish fixed our washing machine by looking at a YouTube. I had to like change the battery on, I think it was a key fob or whatever, and I couldn't figure out how to do it exactly. And so I just typed it into Google and immediately like a minute and a half video from YouTube was like, here's how you change it for this kind of thing. And it worked. It was beautiful. The problem is when doing a thing and having success in a thing is highly subjective, the internet is the worst. And one of the prime examples of that is cooking.
Oh.
So if you say, what's the best way to cook a steak? You will get 1,000 different answers, many of which fully contradict other answers in that 1,000. And all of which only apply if you're using the exact same equipment they were using in their house at the time of year they did it. And so, yeah, I'm bad at it. I'm pretty bad at it.
You think you're bad?
I'm getting better. I meat thermometer is huge.
Yeah.
But meat thermometer lie.
That's the title of the episode right there.
meat thermometer lie. Sometimes meat thermometer, like that, you put in meat thermometer and it say, oh, this is perfectly medium rare. And then you stick in a different part of equal thickness and it's like, oh no, this meat is carbon now. You stick in a different part and say, this meat's still kind of raw, give you botulism. Like, and you're like, this is the same piece of meat. What are you talking about? I recently bought a new meat thermometer because I had a digital one. It was trouble because you got to calibrate it, and it's a process where you fill a glass completely with ice and then water, and then you have to put the little thing in, and it has to be touching an ice cube, I think. I don't know. It's a whole deal. And so I never really trusted it, and then the battery died, and I needed something quick, so at the grocery store, I just got me an old-fashioned one. That's just a thermometer. And I've been using that. But sometimes meat thermometer lie. And then there's factors of resting the meat, and that's extremely important, except now people are like, resting is fine, but having the steak hot is better. And so maybe don't rest it, but then you can tent it with foil, and then it kind of stays warm. And it doesn't help that I like my steaks done at a very different temperature than my wife likes them done. Although, actually, we're learning that with Trish, it's less about doneness and more about, like, if there's bloody juices still there. She could have a pretty rare steak. Well, not rare, but, like, medium rare, as long as it's not got the juices going on. Whereas I'm like, as long as it is cooked enough that I am convinced I won't die, I'm fine. And then with other animals, pork, I'm easing up a little on pork, but chicken, I cook the shit out of it because I'm like, I don't want any of your bad stuff. And you got a lot of bad stuff. Beef is much safer for that kind of thing than pork is safer than people realize with modern ways they do pork, mostly because they put a bunch of antibiotics and bullshit in them. It's a lot safer than it used to be, and you don't have to worry as much about pork. Although still, undercooked pork, very bad. And chicken, any bird, fucking forget about it. You need to, that shit needs to be cooked. So yeah, I've always got processes. It changes all the time. This one, because I didn't want to be outside, I just heated up the grill real strong and then turned it down to low. And put the meat on it and closed it up and was gone for about 7 minutes. And then I came back, I flipped it over, was gone for like 5 minutes. The thermometer said it was more than what it needed to be. So I brought it inside and now it's just sitting there. And we'll see when I cut it open, but I'm not too worried. It's definitely seared, so. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Tiny Hut Podcast, the only podcast in the world with two white guys talking about grilling, but not for the usual reasons. It's mostly because we have a lot of time to kill because we just recorded an episode yesterday, so nothing new has happened to any of us. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 693.
And it is not a coincidence that he said that very slowly and carefully.
Exactly.
He's fucked it up, I believe, twice since before we started recording, although one was only in his mind. He fucked it up once out loud. I heard him. You always have trouble when we're recording an episode before we posted the previous episode, because then the count is off. But for those of you just joining us, we have an email address. Well, sorry, we have a hat, and the hat has an email address. We don't have it. Why would you even think that? That's a dumb premise for a podcast. It only works if you have a magical hat that has its own email address.
Correct.
TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And people, apparently a new person, according to William, I hadn't even checked, but William says it's there. Mm-hmm. And I have... Well, I have only mild reasons to doubt him. People write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want, mostly that they want us to talk about. And the hat magically on its own forwards that to us, and we talk about it. We kill a lot of other time because not a lot of people write in, but that's because not a lot of people listen. So, you know, it works. It's fine.
No big whoop.
No big whoop. You want to fight about it? So, how was your day?
So, let's see. We played some... Diablo 4 last night. Yeah. So
this is the thing now. Anytime you pause and can't remember the title of the video game, it's always Diablo 4. So now I know.
Yeah. So I've been having fun like making up names for. Okay. So this is how this works. Abby basically wants to play every class.
Yes,
she's always
you
like
just
that.
Want to play a wizard.
I just want to play a wizard. And
Wizard McWizard face.
And I don't even want to play the necromancer. Nope.
Yeah.
Just a wizard. And there's like three different, element. You can use electricity, fire, or
Ice.
ice. And of course, the best builds will combine those in special ways or whatever. Don't care about that. I just double down and trying to make one thing at a time and make them as powerful as possible.
But you've done this more than three times.
Correct. So it means that for her to play all the characters, and if I'm going to be a wizard every time, I'm going to have to repeat some. But I like the electricity the best, so that's probably what I'm going to do. Except when she does a sorceress, she wants to do fire, so then I'll do ice again. Just do the whole fire and
To be
ice.
cool, yeah, like that fake Eurovision movie.
But I have to make up names. So the first wizard character, I was electricity and I just called myself Ozone, right? Because that's always been my thing and it
Classic.
makes sense with lightning. And I don't know if I told you this, but so my first name online was Ozone. And I had a few variations where Ozone was already used, like, and that's how I got to Professor Ozone, which that's the one I've used the most and everywhere.
Yeah, and even though you're not credentialed.
Right.
I suppose now you might be.
Correct. So when I did that, it was at the University of Iowa here on the bulletin board system, Ozone. And a friend of mine got on the bulletin board, pretended to be my arch nemesis. And they called
Oh.
themselves Freon, right? Because Freon, when it gets into the atmosphere, it degrades
Breaks up
the ozone.
those. Yeah.
But it's also cold. So my first character was Ozone with electricity. And then my next character was with ice. So I just, oh, Freon, that makes sense. But now I've had to do it and make up new names. And so I'm
So
having
what's the fire one?
Oh, you're gonna hate this. So, fire is just rapid oxidation. So I called myself Oxygen, but it was Jin was JINN. Yeah, I thought you'd really
That's
hate
racist.
that. Oxygen. Well, I spelled the whole thing different, like OK, Z, what,
Oh,
something.
the perfect way is O X Y D apostrophe JINN.
That would have been cool. So now, all right. So I was supposed to do ice again because she was going to do a sorceress, but in the game right now, it's a new season or whatever.
Yeah.
And the big thing this season is you get to customize weapons, as I've said. Well, I suspected, and I've checked with someone else who plays the game, that if you're a sorcerer, like a staff and a wand, I mean, that's what you get to customize. But if you're a rogue, you can customize long swords, short swords, knives, bows. You get to customize more stuff. So it's like, all right. And so Abby decided, well,
She's playing a rogue.
I'll just be a rogue. Well, she was a rogue last time too, but she's a whole new rogue because you have to create a new character with each season. And so I said, well, then I'll just be electric again because that's what I like. And the Latin goddess of lightning is the personification of lightning is Fulgora. And so I made my character Fulgorix. So that's my character's name now.
When you do fire and ice again, I think you got to call him Heat Miser and Snow Miser or whatever
I think I was,
from
no,
the old Christmas
I
thing.
think if I do fire again, I'm going to name him Singularis. And yeah, Singularis.
Such a nerd.
That's if I do ice. No, that's if I do ice again. I don't know if I'll have to do fire. No, I'm not doing fire again ever.
All
She's going
right,
to be
screw
fire.
fire.
No, if I'm ice again, it'll be Singularis. I already figured that one
Which you
out.
will be,
Yeah, I
because
will be ice again, Singularis. And then when she does a necromancer, which she'll probably do last, I'll just do electricity again and I'll come up with something. But anyway, it's been fun to play this game. I mean, part of it's just couch co-op. The designs in this one, I'm not that impressed with, but I still do kind of like the whole...
I've heard it's a bit more grimdark than Diablo 3 was, at least.
That it's that, but also, okay, so like the outfits that you wear as the sorcerer. So, this is weird. So, what they did was... For the female for sorcerer, they designed all these really kind of wild outfits. You know, some of them clearly designed to have sex appeal or whatever, but some of the rest of them, they're just really out there. And it seems pretty clear to me that they designed the female costumes first and then altered them just a little bit for the males. So it's kind of ostentatious and flashy and I don't know. I'm running out of adjectives to describe it.
That's just what sorcerers are like. You clearly don't understand. That's what a sorcerer is.
I mean, it's like some of these costumes, like when I put my character in them, they make me feel uncomfortable. Like, no, I mean, it's not me wearing it. It's just this avatar, but it's still like, I do not want
my dedicated to button that. To shake that booty.
Well, a lot of showing of the bare hairless chest and it's like, what's going on?
That should be a mod. You should be able to put in chest hair.
But yeah, I mean, and some of them have like flared shoulders and all this stuff. It's like, what are you guys doing? I mean, and even on the female models, it just looks like your standard hyper, you know, overdone fantasy female stuff. I mean, I don't like it on
the
women.
You're so uncomfortable even explaining this. It's hilarious.
I don't like it on the female characters either, but I've seen that before, right? But then to just basically put the same thing on the male character, you know, making this only the slightest adjustments, it's like, I really don't like this.
You heard it here first, folks. Diablo 4 is just too woke for William.
It's not woke. It's just, I don't know. It's just not. It is.
I don't.
It feels weird.
Trish has been dragging her feet on trying Diablo 4 to the degree that she might not be interested. I'm not sure. Once I get confirmation that she's not interested, I'll probably try and play it myself. I don't anticipate being really into it, but, you know, a little hack and slash action.
So. Yeah, there's not a lot to be into except for us, sort of nostalgia for coming back to that world. I mean, there's the plot's not really... Well, I don't know. I think Abby really likes... The Lilith thing, I think she likes that.
Yeah, I think the plot for 4 is interesting. Not enough that I'll pay a lot of attention. At one point, I did actually watch a video that took me through all the story of it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's weird what stories aren't interesting unless you're playing them in a video game, and what stories are interesting unless you're playing them.
Right.
Because like Diablo 3's story is very interesting and I found it just in the way when I was playing the damn game.
Kind of, yeah.
But if you see it told somewhere else, but then there are lots of stories that are like, this isn't a great story, but if you're like living it in a video game, that is like, I'm sure Trish gets sick of it. She'll be sitting there and I'm playing some video game and something will happen and I'll just be like, what? Oh my God. And she doesn't even ask what it is because she doesn't care. But I'm just like, but like to explain it wouldn't sound that interesting. But like when you get invested and then.
Yeah, I think it's just, I don't know. It, like I said, there's a little bit of a nostalgia for, because we've played these games before, couch co-op and And sometimes it's okay if the story's not that engaging because that's, you just want to get in there and, like you said,
yeah,
just, you know, fight.
I do that sometimes. I get real limited on that. I played Evil West for that, and now I'm done with that. That's only fun for a while. I'm very narrative focused. Even when I really like the gameplay, like, I'm sure I wouldn't have followed through the Horizon games if it weren't for the fact that I love that story.
Yeah. Well, Abby really liked, I think she liked the whole Lilith thing. I think what disappointed her was they didn't, and I think in many ways couldn't, use the interesting aspects of that story to create interesting choices for the player, right? You don't,
yeah.
There's never like an option to sort of side with Lilith or with some faction that kind of supports Lilith or anything, even for a moment.
So for those of you who don't know, Lilith, who's the main antagonist in this one, in some ways, the whole series has been about good and evil, or at least specifically angels and demons. Although one could argue part of the series is to say the angels and the demons aren't really that different from each other.
Exactly. That's a very strong part of it. Yes.
But Lilith is sort of outside of that. In that, I mean, she's technically a demon, but she kind of did her own third thing. And from what I can tell of Diablo 4, that unique perspective is sort of lost. And no, she's just bad now. In a way, so I'm like, normally we fight demons. This time it's Lilith, who's also a demon. So it's just pretty much the same thing.
Well,
and I feel
mean,
like that's a waste.
It is a waste, but they don't entirely just, I mean, there are a lot of moments that are ambiguous, right? Not ambiguous enough to make them ambiguous enough. They would have had to pose some kind of challenge to the player, you know, to make a choice or to whatever, but there's plenty.
And that's not what these games are for.
No, but there are plenty of story elements that are like, well, she doesn't seem like the bad guy here. Plenty. There's plenty.
That's good.
But unfortunately, they don't go far enough. And in the end, you know, you like, let's say you're playing the game and you're almost RPGing it, right? And there's like all of these interesting ambiguities and different characters who are interacting with this reality and in actually some very interesting and subtle ways. And you get to the end, and if you of the player have a certain mindset about it, like Abby did, you're thinking to yourself, I really feel like there needs to be hard choices from here to the end of the game. And there just aren't any. It's like the character you're playing is completely committed to stopping her and destroying her. And you're like, but would my character really feel that way after all these experiences? That doesn't make sense.
And so, I think you might've hit the nail on the head. It doesn't have to be a great story. I prefer a game that I can role play that I feel is telling me the tale of a specific character. There's a lot of games where you don't get to make any decisions. A lot of the Assassin's Creed games are that way. And it's fun to play, but then also, well, I say that. A lot of the early Assassin's Creed games are that way. And it's fun to play, but you're just seeing the story of what they did. So I know I don't feel like betrayed because I would make different choices because it's not me, it's this guy.
Right.
But games where it's not the story of a person per se, I have to be able to role play it, at least in some capacity.
Yeah.
Or feels weird to me.
It's also fun in the game to meet all these different cultures and to see how they respond to the church in the game. And, you know, that's also really interesting, but again, it gets weird because sometimes the class you're playing really belongs to one of these groups. But while you're playing the game, you're almost always doing the church's bidding without any kind of questioning or challenging or anything. And then you go to that region of the map that your character is probably from, and those people are expressing certain, you know, maybe they feel like they're oppressed by the church or whatever, but your character that seems to belong to that group is not expressing or indicating any of that or given any choices along those lines. So that's also an odd thing.
Yeah, no matter. They don't give a shit about that stuff.
But I mean, it's still fun. And, you know, I don't mind playing it over and over while she gets to try different classes, and each class is different enough that it's a kind of a whole different experience for her. So she really
I
likes
can't
it.
do that. I got too many games. I got too many games.
Yeah.
Well, they're coming hard and fast. I should see. I don't know if you can do cross-platform play, but theoretically, the three of us or even the four of us could play online together.
I think so, yeah. Diablo,
It
for example.
depends on what the system is. You are on PlayStation, I am on Xbox. That's going to make a difference.
Oh.
But with some games, it doesn't. It varies how much they allow for cross platform. Anyway, I have it on good authority that we have an email.
We do.
Well,
You
let's
don't have anything to share just overnight?
not really, not really. I was real hot last night.
You read it, you got everything off your list, huh?
I made some BLT pasta salad, which is a recipe that we like, and it's good when the weather's hot because you make it earlier in the day. And
BLT pasta salad. Wow, that does sound good.
yeah, it's just all the crap you'd get in a BLT mixed up with some pasta. It's in the cookbook. You got the cookbook, page 92. It's there.
When you make a BLT with bread, do you toast the bread?
I believe one should toast the bread,
Okay.
yes.
All right, so the BLT pasta salad is the BLT, but the pasta replaces the toast.
Yes, and there is also the dressing is a little bit different because BLT mayo.
Mayo, right.
The dressing of this is mayo and black pepper and some white wine vinegar and some grated Parmesan.
Oh.
And then at the end, you also toss it with a little more grated. But otherwise, it's just bacon, tomatoes, like grape tomatoes cut in half. And then the original recipe is arugula. I fucking hate arugula, so I just use baby spinach in my
You don't like
arugula.
arugula?
Oh, and red onion. Red onion. Yeah. Yeah. Arugula, it has some taste to it that I don't like. That's, I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Okay,
I
it's
mean, I can
probably
eat it. I can eat
arugula is
just about anything, but
arugula is, I think, is a little like cilantro in that some people taste like this and other people either don't taste it like that, like it's not soapy for some people, or they're okay with how it tastes. Like I think cilantro tastes soapy, but it doesn't, not to a point where it bothers me, but like other people I know don't even think it tastes soapy.
supposedly that's a genetic thing with cilantro.
That's what I've heard. I
But
wonder if
also supposedly, as with just about every food aversion out there, you can get over it just by eating it more and more and
sure.
more.
I wonder if arugula is the same though. I wonder if it's like some
I,
people
I'm
taste
sure,
this.
I mean, most any food, I think I could get over the aversion. The one I'm hesitant on is beets because they literally made me throw up the last time I had them, which admittedly was decades ago, but I literally took a bite and threw up.
Wow.
But most things. There was a famous food critic who wrote a book called The Man Who Ate Everything. And he basically was like, it's not fair if I'm a food critic and I don't like certain foods. So he made himself eat. And I have done this. I like
Okay.
cucumbers. I didn't used to like cucumbers.
Yeah, they're part of the melon family. You don't like melons either, do
Yeah. No.
you?
And so but I made myself. And now I like them. I more often like them in stuff than raw, but I mean, than just having them, but
So,
I can do
is it fair to be a film critic when you don't like certain genres of film?
that. I mean, it's not fair to be a film critic.
All
Full stop.
right, all right.
But, all
Email.
right.
Subject line says, the importance of being earnest.
I'm not earnest, I'm Tony.
She says,
I'm not the only one who always found that title. Is that title supposed to be hilarious?
it's a
Because like
double entendre,
I
isn't
was
it?
all,
Like,
yeah, basically, yeah.
you know.
I was always like, well, and I don't know the story, so I don't know if the main character's named Ernest. But I was always like, that's really funny. And it wasn't until I was a lot older that I was like, oh, Ernest. Like, okay.
Maybe it's,
Before,
I
I thought it was
don't
literally just a story about the importance of being this one dude.
know. Yeah, I think when I first heard it, I was already old enough to know it could have two meanings, and I expected it must have two meanings, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it doesn't. Anyway.
Maybe this email will tell us.
So
Probably not.
I don't know if you or everybody else knows, but she talks about Pete in here, and Pete is her son.
Yes. We have Pete has come up before.
Okay.
I guess maybe not in emails, more in online comments, but
Yeah,
Pete has
maybe.
definitely come up before.
So her adult son.
The
So
importance of being Pete.
she says, Pete and I recently watched Godzilla Minus One. Good. And at the end, he said that he thought it shared with RRR a sense of earnestness that you don't see in American movies. Is that that? What the R, capital R period, capital R period, capital R period, is that's a film, right? That's a
I don't think there's periods, but yes, it's the greatest movie of all time, and I've told you again and again you need to see it if you
okay.
haven't done it.
A sense of earnestness that you don't see in American movies. I described it as holding strong beliefs, and parenthetically, she says cultural slash national, without irony. And she says, maybe that's just a description of earnestness. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. That, maybe that is a description of earnestness when you hold strong beliefs without irony. Anyway, and brought up the idea that earlier American movies did have this. She thought of How the West Was Won. Do you agree? And if so, why do you think this is? I do think that. So accepting the framing that this email presents, which I do, I think there is an earnestness to some of these other films. I wouldn't say we don't have films in America. I mean, I think the Marvel movies were, well, no, I take that back. I mean, it seems like you can't show any earnestness in any storytelling without cracking a joke or, you know, kind of winking at the audience, like, oh, we're not taking this too seriously, don't worry. And like The Postman was very earnest in a way that even made me roll my eyes, which that takes a lot because I actually like earnest. I think that's fun. And you know, when you can make me
Which
roll
one's
my
your
eyes,
favorite
which
of
one what?
the Ernest movies?
Okay. But I think a lot of art is earnest. I mean, I think when someone is inspired or driven to make a piece of art, that's how can they not be earnest about it? I mean, that's why they're doing it. So for the piece itself, whatever it is, if it's a book or a film or a painting, whatever it is, if it seems to encourage the viewer or the audience or whoever to not take it very seriously. That's actually kind of odd, right? Because, and I think that is a fairly recent thing in art. I mean, I'm not saying there's, you know, satire and all those things have existed. I'm saying there's a certain kind of artistic expression that exists that, you know, maybe it's existed before lots of different times, but it's like almost like a movement now where you are earnest about it, but you feel like you have to be sort of self-referential and meta and all this stuff so that you send the message that to the person that is earnest as you obviously appear as the person creating this thing that you're not taking yourself too seriously. And I'm not sure, like, I don't know where it originated again. Maybe it's existed since the beginning of time, but as a movement, right? As a very recognizable trend in popular culture, I think it is a fairly recent thing. I'm not sure when it started, but I don't. I don't think I fully understand really the whole thing of being ironic. Like when people like something ironically, or they claim to like it ironically, what I see is they just like it, but they feel self-conscious about liking it. So they like it ironically. And it's like, just let yourself like it. It's okay. You don't have to pretend you're only pretending to like it. So I guess I don't fully grasp it, or maybe I have it all wrong, but I think it's related to the thing Jazz is talking about in film. There's some kind of self-consciousness in our culture about being serious, or liking something seriously, or having a serious attitude about something, self-consciousness that you have to diffuse with making a joke, or pretending that you don't really like it. You like it ironically, but I don't know. What do you think? You probably have more insight on this than I have.
I'm just wanting to see how long till you wind down. Someday I'm going to try it. I'm just like not going to speak for the whole hour and just see what you do. It's going to be crazy. I do think there's something to this, and I do think it's. I mean, it fits the, I was going to say literary tradition, but media traditions, that modernism and postmodernism both lent themselves to a loosening of earnestness under the guise that pure earnestness isn't real. That realistically, you're not always like that. You're cracking jokes, or something ridiculously funny happens, even in moments where it's not all speeches and protestations of love, and sort of this belief that it was more real, to sort of mix it up. And then I think something has grown out from that, and it's turned into marvelism, where we're just entertaining, so we don't want to get too serious. But it can go too far. The second of the recent It movies was lambasted for a variety of reasons. Apparently it wasn't that good. I didn't see it. But one of the things is it very much undercut the fear of every scene by doing something silly. Most famously, one scene where Pennywise is like vomiting black stuff into a guy's mouth, and Angel of the Morning plays for no reason for like 10 seconds of the scene. But there's just a lot of sort of undercut stuff. So you can take it too far. Although it's a horror genre, I see portions of this as being very, very distinctly an American phenomenon, however. Because, well, there's a few things. When you're looking at RRR, and to a degree, I suppose, when you're looking at Godzilla Minus One, people are acting on behalf of their people, their nation, their community. Americans don't do that in movies, ever. At best, they act on behalf of their family. But we don't have this sense of like American identity, except in very negative, externally produced ways. Even things in the UK, you'll get like, this is a very, British sensibility, and we do things because we're English, and this is why. You don't get that so much with Americans. You don't have things. I think because one of the foundational beliefs of American identity at this point is individualism, is pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps without recognizing the irony of that sentence, things like that. We're all individualists. So there's, I think, tied to that earnestness is you are struggling for others. And we don't do that a lot with American characters. The exception being your family. And those movies get serious as fuck. I haven't seen them because I don't like them. I'm guessing there are not a lot of jokes in the Taken movies. Like, whenever somebody kidnaps your wife or your girlfriend, it's always a girl, your daughter, maybe your son, but what is a son except just a proto male, so still kind of a girl. Is very serious then. Those movies, we don't joke around when we're saving our poor little daughters and stuff like that. But outside of that, you don't get a lot of American movies where people are fighting and struggling for their community, for their neighborhood, for their nation. Certainly we don't, unless they're aliens or some shit. So yeah, I think it's very much not an American thing in terms of the version of Americans that is in movies today.
Okay, so but like Marvel movies, you think that those follow that pattern also somehow, that even though they're fighting to save the
Marvel superheroes aren't fighting for anybody.
Oh.
Marvel superheroes are fighting because there's bad guys. And that's what they do, is they fight bad guys. Okay. And don't get me wrong, there are stakes. But nobody's identity in a Marvel movie is, I gotta do this, save humanity, and that's my whole thing. No, it's like, oh, yeah, don't want the Earth to blow up. Those are the bad guys. Let's go zap them with our power rays.
Okay, so it's...
But there's not... Nobody ever navel gazes on the stakes in a Marvel movie. Not really. Hmm. You get... The closest exceptions you get are the Black Panther movies. Because they're not American. And you will get some of that there, talking about my people and what they're willing to do. And in fact, the second Wakanda Forever was very much about two groups with strong identities with their communities fighting because they felt their community's identity was on the line. And so there was a lot of very strong earnestness in that movie. I also didn't like it, but I did at least see that one. So, but no, that weight doesn't show up in any of the Marvel movies. Yes, there are stakes, but nobody fucking cares. It's those are the bad guys. We're the good guys. Hammer time.
Hammer time.
That's it. We played with it a little bit with the snap in some of the TV shows, and those TV shows occasionally played at earnestness, but not a lot. And obviously there are exceptions to all these things. There are independent movies that take this shit more seriously. I'm very curious. It's on Peacock right now, so we'll probably watch it. The Dev Patel directed and starring action film Monkey Man.
Hmm.
I'm going to be really curious how that... Apparently it's quite good. I'm going to be curious how... what he's fighting for, and I have no idea. I know nothing about the premise at this point. But how what he's fighting for may or may not relate. I do hate to say, I'm going to throw this in there too, and I hate to say this, and I don't want to accuse Jazz of anything. This is very much something I do. I have discussed before that people can fool me into thinking they are better actors than they are when they are not speaking English. And I didn't know this was a phenomenon until I watched a movie in which a character spoke English and seemed like a really shitty actor, and then had a flashback scene in which she spoke Chinese and suddenly seemed like a good actor. But it was the same actress, same character, everything. In the same way, I think I project more earnestness onto non-English performances. Because just, and the same thing with the acting, I think the subtleties and mannerisms, they're not all universal. A lot of them are very cultural focused. And if I don't know those, then it resonates differently for me. Things seem more serious when they're not. you have to be pretty explicit about something being a joke in a non-English performance for me, because I'm not picking up on cues, or especially context cues involving the language used, I'm not picking up on. And so, for me, I get RRR, and I could see it with Godzilla Minus One, would seem more earnest, more serious, more grounded, in part because the lens through which I'm experiencing it is much narrower.
Yeah, I mean, so I've always, for as long as I've watched movies where with non-English speakers, and, you know, college, I guess, is when that first started, I realized right away that, like, when I told, if I told someone I thought it was a good movie, I always had to amend it by saying, now, maybe everyone in it's a terrible actor and I can't tell. I don't know. Right. And if you can't understand what a person's saying, or how that language has inflections that means certain things, I mean, how are you going to know? All I can say is that as a person reading subtitles or hearing it dubbed and sort of ignoring how badly dubbed it was, because I wasn't going to hold that against the movie having a bad dub job or whatever. I have no idea. Maybe the actors were terrible, but since I have no frame of reference to judge that, I can only judge it based on the things that I can say something about, like cinematography, editing, and things like that. And that's what I'm saying is a good movie based on that. And, you know, Godzilla Minus One is this exact same thing. I have no idea if any of those people were good actors, and I don't pretend to know. And I can, here's, I mean, something I
can
tell you.
There's a way you can get there, and the answer is experience.
Sure,
if you watch a lot of Japanese movies, eventually you're going to notice things.
Probably. And there are things that, like, if I took what I was seeing on the screen and imagined if they were speaking English, and thinking, well, if in an American movie, if someone acted this way, behaved this way, what would that, how would I perceive that? And, you know, sometimes it's like, well, that wouldn't work with,
yeah.
I mean, that particular thing wouldn't work. But so I don't know if maybe for a Japanese audience, it also doesn't work, or maybe it does because that's their, how the culture works. So that seems
well,
fine.
And that's when you can factor that in right here. I would say Western culture, and particularly American culture at this point in time, does not value earnestness. And that is reflected in a lot of our entertainment.
Well, it also doesn't value very, shows of emotion that are very, like, big, right? Like,
well,
emotion's always
very
subtle.
Genuine.
Yeah.
Very genuine.
Emotion's always very subtle, you know? It's always a tear fling down the cheek and not someone just crying openly, or someone falling on their knees and begging a person to do something or the other.
Yeah.
It's rarely
that.
No,
it's empathetic in American culture to do that.
Right.
I do want to say, I pulled all of this out of my ass, so I might totally be wrong. If you think I'm wrong, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and explain to me how I'm wrong, because I'm pretty sure I must be in there somewhere. Also, if you want me to pull things out of my ass for your benefit, write themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And even though I said it in the grossest way possible, maybe you'll find it useful. It's going to get crazy up in here because it's going to be almost 2 weeks before we record again. But for y'all, they will still come out at a nice week-to-week pace. So just pretend everything's okay. We'll get through this.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.